We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time to get it off your chest, whether you're mad or blessed.
Say it with your chest.
We want to hear from you on The Breakfast Club.
So you better have the same energy.
Yeah. Monica.
Hey, guys. Hey, Breakfast Club.
Hey, Monica.
What's happening?
Good morning.
Get it off your chest.
Listen. Would you say the guy who was making minimum wages, but everything is good with him, meaning that sex is good, his conversation is good, energy is good, he just don't have a lot of money.
But where does he work at?
He does security.
Okay.
Because security's a good job. How old is he?
He's in his early 40s. But I just don't, like, it's just that when we out, I'm paying half the bill, you know, but like he just doesn't.
This is how you know girls don't really be wanting love. Y'all don't really be wanting love like y'all say y'all do, because you said this man is cool, he got everything else, but you worried about how much money he make. It's how I know y'all really don't be the one in love. You need to stop lying to yourself.
I'm just trying to figure it out. Like, would you date someone like that?
Well, you are, and you are happy. The only thing you're not happy about is having to pay for stuff all the time.
No. That's not the only thing. But if, you know, if you come in short all the time, will that become an issue later in life? Is what my concern is.
I
think the concern is more about his aspirations and what is it that he wants to do for himself, right?
Well, my goal is pushing him to do better or pushing him to even look for a better job. He may be content with what he's doing, and that's the problem right now.
Okay, so you don't...
He okay with making his minimum wage, and I'm looking like a bigger picture.
Have you had the conversation with him?
Of course.
And what did he say?
I mean, you know, you can't force no one to do something if they don't have the willpower to do it themselves. You can tell them all day long.
Yeah, he probably don't have the aspiration.
To do better and look for better, but if they're not pushing to do it, then you like... to a ball.
But are you willing to lose love over some money?
That's the dilemma.
Oh my God.
It's like, I know. Like, I'm thinking long term, though. I'm not, like, you, when you're of age, you don't want to freaking, you're not dating just to be dating. You're thinking, like, this needs to be a husband material, not a little boyfriend.
And I will say,
a young girl.
It's not just about the money, it's about his motivations in life, right?
So that's my thing. Like, if I don't see that you're eager to do better, then how can I see long term in you? If I'm seeing that you're content with a mediocre job that's making $10-$12 an hour and you're not pushing for greatness, like, how is that?
Why would I want to go further with that?
That's my thing.
You do realize most Americans want a better job, right? Most Americans want a career. A lot of those things aren't available.
Yeah, but if he's not trying, that's really an issue. When people are motivated, they're trying, they're going hard.
I can tell you all day long to go apply every day for a job. I can tell you all day long.
Yeah, but the problem, but this is the thing. He might not be motivated by money. He might just enjoy life. He might not want to work as hard and work harder. He likes his job. He likes the money that he gets, and he loves you. I don't see the problem with it.
How about Americans want jobs, but not low-paying hourly work, but a lot of jobs aren't available?
I understand all that. I truly do. But you're looking at long-term, like, mortgages and bills and stuff that needs to be paid.
You got goals in life.
Love.
And you work hard, so.
Mm-hmm. I, work a pretty decent job. So right. if anything, I'm looking like if I stay in this situation, I'm going to be fronting most of the darn bill.
So it shouldn't matter. You know, I ain't going to front it. The money shouldn't matter if you love somebody. Because then what you gonna, you leave this dude, then you find somebody that makes a bunch of money. He cheats on you. He doesn't treat you right. But yet he pays the most of the bills.
I hope you get laid off. I hope you get laid off.
It. Don't say
and
that.
Then you'll understand what love is.
All right.
I hope you get laid off, and all he got is that little minimum wage job.
Well,
all right.
If
and then
a,
you'll really appreciate that
so
love
mean.
And what he brings to the table.
But we can't tell her where her priority should be in a relationship. If it's important to her to have somebody.
I hope I don't get laid off, but I hope he finds a better job.
Yeah, yes, there you go.
She wants him to get motivated.
All right. All right. He might be motivated. Day. He might just enjoy what
she
he's doing.
Love you more.
Good morning.
Thank
Bye.
You. All right. Get it off your chest. 800-585-1051. If you need to vent, you can hit us up at any time. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Wake up, wake up. Wake your ass.
This is your time to get it off your chest. Whether you're mad or blessed, we want to hear from you on The Breakfast Club.
Keith, what's up, Keith?
What's up, man? I'm mad at Charlamagne, man. About when he came to Dallas, man, I gave him a dope matter sweatshirt. It's a brand me and my homeboy started. And, man, he took it, but he treated it like a mixtape because he ain't never rocked it.
What's it called? A Dope Stuff Matters?
Yeah, but sugar, honey, iced tea in the middle. Mm-hmm. I was at the book thing. I gave you the
I think I did wear that shirt, bro. I'm not sure. I thought I did.
Thank you. Thank you. If you did, I appreciate that.
Don't quote me on that, man.
Oh, well,
I worry too.
If you rocked it around the house, I still appreciate it, man. You ain't treated like a mix.
Nah, I had it on with no drawers. I was like Winnie the Pooh.
That's a little too much information, bro. JB!
What's going on, Envy, Angel Yee, and the God?
Hey,
what's
JB.
What's up, JB? How you doing?
What's up? Get it off your chest.
What's JB stand for? Just
kinky this morning, man.
Where did that come from?
Yeah, man, my son Josiah, man, my 4-year-old baby boy, man, he's the inspiration for me changing my life around, and I got a new promotion at my job, and with the extra money, I'll be able to promote my brand, Rich Fatherhood. Check me out on Instagram, man, Twitter.
Rich Fatherhood, I like that.
Now say it with a little enthusiasm.
Rich Fatherhood. I got them for the mothers, too, man, Rich Motherhood. I got some good out there, man, check me out.
All right, brother. Kershi.
Hi. Oh, my God. Okay, I got her again. Good morning.
Good morning.
I love you so every single day. So, just wanted you guys' opinion. That's it. If I should keep going or not. That's all.
Sing a little bit of it.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Seriously?
Yeah, no. Go. Sing.
That was it.
I got my girls in the club tonight. I ain't worried about a thing tonight. If you could... back home, just pretend he's gone and leave all on the egg.
Woo!
Man, heard it all before. I feel like I've heard that type of record 20 million times
already.
You
probably got to hear it as a real song and everything.
You and the girls going to the club tonight. All right.
You can sing, though.
No, you definitely listen to it, so it's different.
Okay.
All right. We'll check it out, mama. We gotta get you a new phone.
The only way you can write a record about going to the club with your girls and it'd be different is if you tell the truth about standing in line to get in free before 11. You know what I'm saying? I'm serious.
I mean, there's not too many
songs does
that don't have a theme we haven't heard before, though.
That's not true.
Mary Bell.
Hi. Hey, fam.
Hey, fam.
Hi, fam.
Hey, fam.
What's up, fam? Get it off your chest.
What's it called? We're up at 3 a.m, so we're calling you guys.
Oh, y'all in Cali.
What's up, LA family? What's up, guys?
Yeah. What's up, fam?
Hey, fam?
Where the hell y'all been?
Trying to get through.
We've been calling you, but we just haven't gotten through.
Exactly.
And we thought you got locked up or something.
No, God, no. No. Well, okay. And then we want to do a shout out to Bernard at Foot Locker. He's a part of our new member in our Breakfast Club crew.
All right.
What's up, Bernard at Foot Locker? Can I get the discount when I'm in town in Foot Locker?
Oh, yeah. I'll let him know.
No, all right.
Thank you.
I'll put myself in there. All right, bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Have a great Friday.
Millie.
Hi. How are you?
Millie's stressed out, guys.
What's the matter?
Very. So I've been dating, and it seems like every guy I date, they always tell me, like, I will make the perfect wife, but it never gets anywhere.
Damn.
Why would single? They tell you that? That's the worst thing you could tell a person.
But
you would make the perfect wife.
Do they make the perfect husbands?
There's one.
Okay, not the rest of them.
What is it about you that, is your macaroni and cheese trash? Like, why don't you make the perfect wife?
No, my macaroni and cheese is great, I think.
How about body odor?
Great.
Okay.
Vagina.
From what I'm told, perfect.
You didn't answer that with the same confidence as the mac and cheese.
What about breath?
I mean, I don't have any. I'm not blessed on the top, but I'm blessed on the bottom.
Hey. he said breath, not breath, baby.
just want
to throw that out there.
Breath,
okay? Because honestly, the way you said that, the way you said that is like, yo, I'm blessed at the top, meaning your breath is cool, but at the bottom is a little older. That's what you got to listen, you know?
Well, I'm sorry, Mama. Did you try Christian Mingle?
No.
Maybe that's what you should try.
You'll find the right
Mingle.
One, baby.
I mean, I like thugs, so.
Well, there you go. Where you from?
Maybe that's my problem. Jersey.
Oh, if you like thugs, you go Newark, Patterson.
Damn, that was a terrible thing to say.
Well, no. Definitely not going
Camden.
There. I mean, I think my problem is, you know, New York guys. A lot of New York guys.
Well, stay out of Harlem, Brooklyn,
holy
Queens.
Shucks.
Where should you go?
I don't know where she should go.
Why are you telling her to stay away from these places?
I don't know. Well, good luck, Mama. Get it off your chest. 800-585-1051. If you need to vent, you can hit us up at any time. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Hey, girlfriends. It's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ MV Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building,
Amara LaNegra.
Yinz on. Thank you guys
so much
for having me back.
Yes.
And you know, last time I was here, it was very intense. So this time around is going to be so much better.
Ain't it? I don't think it was intense.
I think social media
made it intense after the fact, but I don't think
after
it was intense.
Well, we were good.
I just want to say, so you was at the Brooklyn Nets game.
Yes.
Shout out to the Brooklyn Nets.
Yes.
And what player was trying to get in your DMs?
Oh, I ain't telling.
Which one about Brooklyn Nets?
Let me tell you something. If I were to say all the athletes and rappers that slide up in my DMs, there would be a lot of broken marriages.
Oh,
so let me be in my
God.
Best behavior, okay?
That's a compliment, though, right? I mean, not a compliment.
She don't want
sure
to break up no marriages.
Exactly.
That you're wanted so much.
Something like that. Yeah. But you know what? It also depends, because what exactly do you want me for? Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you're just trying to get my goodies, it ain't going to happen.
Now, let's talk about Jessie Wu, because she accused you of allegedly trying
shucks.
To holler at her man.
That's the shady turn away, Amara.
She said that you told him, do you ever cheat on your girlfriend?
See, when she threw the bottle at me and everything else, you know, everything was gravy. I try to be very calm and collective. I always try to think before I act, and sometimes I'd be having a delay because, you know, I'm trying to process how to handle the situation.
Because right.
I think about my image. Is this right?
Am I think about those things,
good?
Too.
I think about everything before I react. So when she did that, you know, I was whatever. But the moment she mentioned my mama.
Mm-mm.
It's a wrap.
We're not having that.
I'm going to have no respect towards you whatsoever. So since you mentioned her, I really wouldn't like to use my airtime right here, right now with y'all to talk about her. So therefore, I won't mention her name. However, I have no need to be trying to get anybody else's man because I already have enough trying to get at me. Like, I already have enough dudes trying to holler at me. So there's no need for me to try to holler at anybody's man. Not to mention the fact that if I were to see him today, I don't even remember how he looks. The truth of what happened was I was having a meeting with my team and she came to my meeting because she wanted my manager to manage her.
Mm-hmm.
So I was handling myself for Girl Talk, a TV show that I'm working on, yada, yada. She comes with her man. Her man decides to sit down at the table. We were talking about Girl Talk, and the question was, would you forgive your spouse if they cheat on you? A lot of people said no. A lot of people said yes. The question went around the table.
Okay.
It wasn't that it was just you and me. There were like six people in the table. My manager took her aside so they could have their business meeting, and then she came back. She wasn't even there. So I don't know what happened when he left or when they left.
He gassed it up.
It was funny how this happened like a year ago, and then when she was on the show, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, she wanted to bring this topic up, not to mention that she's not even with the guy anymore. So mm-hmm. that makes you even look crazier. So, you know.
We know everybody needs a storyline on Love & Hip Hop.
I know, and then that's
and
what
conflict
everybody,
sells.
Everybody wants to be part of my storyline. I get it.
And that's why I was shocked when they said, you know, they let you let them throw a bottle at you. Like, I feel like you would avoid all conflict.
I did.
On Love & Hip Hop.
And I apologize even for something that I didn't do just to create the peace.
Does the violence make you want to quit the show?
Of course, you know, because yeah. I don't have that type of drama. Mm-hmm. I'm very anti-confrontational. Is it like a Libra thing? But then again, I do know what I got myself into. Realistically, whether you see me on social media, you see me in real life, I'm always the same person.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, I try to be very wise on how I handle every situation.
Now, what is the problem that Bobby Lights has with you? I don't even understand where those issues stem from because he seems to think that you're fake and you're not this great
Everybody
person.
Everybody thinks that I'm fake. Everybody thinks that I'm fake, and I understand how a lot of people see me in the spotlight and see me being successful and see me here and there, and she's in a cover and she's this and she's doing that fake ass and all these other things. We're all given the same opportunities. We're all on the same platform. We all have the same amount of airtime. How come you ain't popping? Put in the work.
Well, listen, the person whose name you don't want us to mention, Jessie Wu, she said your storyline last season about colorism was done for sympathy.
Yes.
Is that true?
Well, you see, I'm very understanding. You see this? I understand how a lot of people that didn't know about me before Love & Hip Hop just think that I came out of the blue. But if you go back into interviews many, many, many years ago, mm-hmm. I have been an activist for the Afro-Latino community for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happens to be that it took Love & Hip Hop, an American platform, for the people to actually listen to me. So you just can't, that I did it for sympathy. I don't have to gain sympathy out of that because realistically, if it's also about talent, I'm talented.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to do that. If I decide to do anything besides music, like Love and Hip Hop, a reality show where I'm being maybe slightly ratchet, I know what I'm doing as well. Mm-hmm. I think things through very well.
So, Julian, was you trying to create a sympathy line for Jesse Wu?
No.
Oh, why you like that? You seem to like that conversation.
Not really.
Oh, okay, great. Because I don't care to entertain it either. Great.
All right, we have more with Amara La Negra when we come back. Don't move. It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. Amara La Negra is here from Love and Hip Hop Miami. Charlamagne?
Yeah, I think that's whack when you experience a little bit of hard luck and a few bad things happen to you and you blame it on your friend putting roots on
you. And then that she ain't got no man. Okay, well, that's something you need to work on your own. Oh, that you have beef with your friends. Well, maybe you should control your mouth. Oh, that your store hasn't sold any clothes. Well, maybe you should have better clothes. Find a marketing team. Find something. I mean,
y'all ain't never be friends.
Hell no.
That's the point of no return.
Listen, the same thing goes for anybody that mentions my mother is a rap. Just like Jessie, she did the same thing. She said, even in reunion. In reunion, right? Because she likes to put this act like she, oh, Bill.
You signed the NDA now. Don't you know you can't speak on the reunion?
She was about to tell us something, Charlamagne. Why did you ruin that?
You're right.
Can I say it?
What the hell is wrong with this guy?
All right, exactly. I'm not trying to be like her, but just know this much. Besides the fact that she said you and your mama can get it, I know that my English is not very good looking sometimes, and I don't be understanding, but okay, I understand you and your mama can get it.
That's now, that can go either way now. A guy can look at you and your mama and be like, yo, you and your mom can get it.
No, she said that, and then on top of that, she went on social media talking about when my mother said beat her ass. Obviously, I think any parent would, you know. If you see that your kid gets a glass bottle thrown at you, and I didn't do nothing, I didn't even try to attack her back.
Yeah, you just stepped out the way.
My mother said, if you see her again, beat her ass if she comes for you. Of course, I think any mother would have said the same thing. Is it the right thing to say? Maybe not. But then that's what she said, and she said, here's the difference in between my mother, that's a professional nurse for 35 years, and a woman that flips empanadas for a living or whatever. That really pissed me off, too. And I have it as well, you know. I thought that was f***ed up because thanks to that lady flipping empanadas, I am where I am today.
I was hoping you were going to bring some of those empanadas because they look amazing.
I should have bought my mama. And something that I'm very proud of as well that I want to put it out there is after so much work and sacrifice, I was finally able to buy my mom a house.
Hey.
And that makes me feel very proud.
That's
beautiful. A little 7-bedroom, 5-little-bathroom house.
Okay.
And she can't complain now. Yeah.
How many people are living in this house?
Just the two of us.
In a 7-bedroom? Okay.
You have to think big.
Yes.
Think big. I'm very ambitious. I think big and I think that, you know, 5 years from now when I come back, I will be in a better place.
You have the babies.
Usher at one point?
So let me tell you about my career. My music is doing great. And this EP called Unstoppable is available everywhere. You guys can go download it. I'm promoting this single called Celebra featuring Messia, which is really cool. This book is really good. Actually, let me stop. Look, I don't talk about my personal life. Mm-hmm. I'm very private. That's why nobody has ever seen me or have seen anything or anybody that I date. And I have dated celebrities in the past. But Usher and I are just really good friends.
True.
There you go.
Okay.
But you are in a relationship with somebody now. You're seeing someone.
I'm talking to someone right now, yes.
Is it Usher?
No.
Oh, okay. Right.
Is he, okay.
It's Usher.
Is he in the entertainment business?
Perhaps.
Okay. Are you in love?
I am getting to know him.
Okay.
You know, I am very protective of my heart, you know, because you have to be.
You
especially
know how to spell
as a
his
woman,
name?
So. So what?
You know how to spell his first and last name?
I do.
Spell it.
Why? No, I'm waiting. I'm waiting because, you know, what about if it doesn't happen the way that I plan?
Would that scare you from dating somebody?
What?
If they had herpes?
I don't think so. It depends. I mean, I know there's medications, there's treatments, and I think that also people are very ignorant on the topic, so you just think
very
herpes,
true.
And you think, oh my God, I'm gonna get, I'm right. gonna die, or, you know, don't get next to me, I got the herpes. Like, I just think that once you get informed on it, then
so many
you, there's
people
ways
have
of,
it. Yeah, you have to step the stigma of,
it's a terrible stigma around it, and it's really not like people think it is.
Right. Yeah. So I just think that once you get informed, there's ways to go around it and you can have a happy, you know, life.
You can have an outbreak once and never have one again, if I guess, right? And you only can get it if the person's having an outbreak.
You should have seen how Angela looked at me just now.
Oh, you're so sweet. But yes, no. I keep my personal life very
she
to myself.
She said yes, no. But yes, no.
Right, no.
But Amara, congratulations on everything.
Thank
congratulations
you so much.
On Unstoppable. I know you have a full length album coming out soon,
yes,
too, this
in
year.
Summer.
Word. Samara LaNegra, it's The Breakfast Club.
It's topic time. Call 800-585-1051 to join into the discussion with The Breakfast Club.
Talk about it.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ MV, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. Now, if you just join us, if you watch The Kardashians, this is what happened, and then we'll explain it. Let's play the audio.
He was really upset. She was putting her in the car, and Penelope scratched her face.
If a kid scratches, can you pop the kid in his... Cool,
no, but you could also say something to her in the moment.
I'm sorry, but if he scratched me for no reason, I'm whipping her ass, and I'll explain to y'all later.
What?
I would whip her ass.
You would whip Penelope's ass if she scratched you? What are you talking about?
Scratch me.
You would whip my daughter's ass if she touched you?
Now you explain what they're talking about.
But yes, we're talking about Corey Gamble, that's Kris Jenner's boyfriend, said that if Penelope, who is Kourtney Kardashian's daughter, scratched him in the face, he would whip her ass.
Right. Now I actually hit my my niece when I was younger. I didn't know no better. I popped her on the hand and I was wrong for it. I felt funny for it. She was acting up and I popped her and I had a conversation with her dad. And, you know, we talked about it. It was no big problem.
Was he mad?
No, he wasn't mad at all. That, like my grandmother used to hit. I remember my grandmother beating me for spraying roach spray on the stove just so I could see the flames go up.
That's your grandma, though. Your grandma is your big mama. You know what I'm saying? Your grandma is the person who used to beat your parents. So being that you came from her chairing, okay, she has the right to put her hands on you.
She
grandma
did.
Really might be the only person.
And I sprayed the roach spray, and then I said something to grandma, like, don't hit me. And then when my dad got there,
bang.
My dad beat me for talking to his mother like that.
Exactly. See, listen, grandma and granddaddy might be the only person that have the rights to do that, but, I mean, me personally...
He's kind of like a granddaddy, though.
Who?
What's his name, Yee?
Corey Gamble?
Yeah, he's kind of like a grandfather.
No, he's not. Why is he a grandfather?
He's the grandfather.
Oh, he's a step-grandfather. No,
yeah.
but he's not
but
by
not
blood.
Married.
He's not by blood. The moral of the story is I don't beat my children. I don't beat my children because I just don't see the need. You know what I'm saying? And furthermore, I think that you can just have a conversation with kids, but I'm definitely not putting my hands on nobody else, child. Like, if you put your hands on somebody else, child, then me and you got smoke immediately. There is never a reason for you to put hands on my children. And what if I don't beat my kids, but you hit my kids?
Well, I've never, ever hit anybody else's kids either. I have three godchildren. I'm the number one babysitter. Actually, I feel like when I'm babysitting, my responsibility is just to spoil other people's kids.
I don't see nothing wrong with that.
That's what you should do.
That's all I do.
As a godparent.
They always like, okay, I'm going to see Angela, so I already know what we're going to do. We're going to go shopping. We're going to go buy some new toys. We're going to get ice cream.
My grandma hit me with an ashtray one time. I did stupid stuff. I deserved it, though. I deserved it.
Listen, we all...
It fixed me, straightened me right up.
No, it didn't.
So it's okay for us to hit you?
No, it didn't.
Yes,
listen, we all got beaten when we were kids. I got beaten with extension cords. My dad used to beat me with an extension cord, made me go take a bath. I used to have to go pick the switch. I had them little wooden utensils on the freaking kitchen wall. My mama would hit me with those. But guess what? If we being honest, all of that was just abuse. And the truth to the matter is, all our parents was doing was the best they could. They were probably young parents at the time. That's the only way they knew how to discipline was through physical punishment. We know better in this generation. We don't got to beat our kids. And we damn sure shouldn't be putting our hands on nobody else's.
Kendra!
Yeah?
Good morning, Kendra. You ever hit somebody else's kids?
Yes, I have.
Why?
Uh-oh.
I was actually inside the grocery store, and the little white kid called me the B word. So
bitch.
I give his mom a chance. Yeah. So I give his mom a chance to reprimand him, you know, like, hey, you don't do that. That's disrespectful. So he calls me the B word again. He was like, bitch, hurry up. And I popped him in his mouth. You got me
Hey, Kendra!
Oh, my gosh.
What is it, Kendra? You can't walk around. That's
Kendra,
abuse.
Kendra, her mama should have dragged.
Yeah, her
mama should have dragged your ass
and then locked
skull.
You up. You can't just be hitting kids you don't know, kid. You don't even know this kid.
Hey,
Robert, if he had Tourette's.
I gave his mom a chance.
Robert, if he had Tourette's and he had a problem and he would just be splurting out, bitch, so you just popped the kid in the mouth.
Nah, come on now. See, then I would have felt bad. But see, she didn't say none of that. She was just like, yeah, hurry up. And just like stood by her son's side. So she left me with her ass too.
What did the mama do to you after you hit the child?
Nothing. she just kind of looked at me like, I can't believe you hit my son. And I just looked at her. I was like, yo, you got a problem? I said, we can go out to the parking lot.
Boy, y'all some brave souls.
Because then you was about to fight the mom?
If that lady would have pulled out a gun and shot you right there, she'd have been in the right, because the story would have been, a woman hits somebody's child in the store.
Not even that. Crazy black woman.
Yeah, crazy black woman hits a white little kid in the store. A white woman, she guns it down.
Kendra, where you from?
That one, I'm from Chicago.
Yeah, makes sense.
Hey, bitch, hurry up and get off my phone.
My goodness. Hello, Sandra.
Hey.
Is it okay to discipline somebody else's child?
Hey. I think it's perfectly fine. I have two children, and I have a boyfriend that's helping me raise them. And he's there. He's playing daddy. He does everything with them. And when my six-year-old gets out of line, it's perfectly fine for him to disrespect them.
I don't like that, especially being that you got your little boyfriend putting your hands on your children, because you don't know what kind of trauma your boyfriend might have. Your boyfriend might be going through something, and sometimes he might be mad and take it out on the kids.
Hey, I mean, everything is done with me present. I think that if it's, you know, if I'm there and, you know, he's not beating him and pop, you know, hitting him with anger, I think it's perfectly fine.
What if the child, what if the father, right, what if his girlfriend would hit your kid?
Well, I guess I'm a little different because our dynamic is a little different. My boyfriend communicates directly with my son's father. And when, you know, we share our custody of him. So mm-hmm. if, you know, he gets out of line and he gets a pop, that's fine. It's, as long as it's not like a beating or, you know, I'm just lashing you. If you have to pop him on his hand or, you know, pop him on his butt with your hand, I think it's perfectly fine.
Thank you, Mama.
And that's the other thing people don't take into consideration. Sometimes you out and about in America and life is kicking your ass all day, and then you come home and you find out your kids did something wrong and you take out that pain on them. Man, please. No way, Jose.
Keep it locked. We have more coming up next. It's The Breakfast Club. Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
Yes, indeed.
Dr. Claude Anderson. Welcome, sir.
Well, thank you all for inviting me. I'm glad to be here. Looks like I'm in good company.
Yes, yeah, good morning. You know, you've been a very requested guest.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. People are always like, you got to have Dr. Claude Anderson on. You got to have Dr. Claude Anderson on for years. Yes. People have been saying that.
Well, you know why? I've been paying him well to ask you that.
is that what Powernomics is?
No, Powernomics is specifically dedicated to trying to inform black folk and trying to elevate them to a higher level of competitiveness in the society and overcome the primary legacies of slavery and centuries of Jim Crow semi-slavery in the mm-hmm. South. We're in a very dangerous situation in this country as black folk, and this next year going to be our last chance to get out of it.
I thought you about to say it's going to be our last year, period. I wouldn't doubt that either.
That's pretty close. Mm-hmm. You're in a very dangerous situation. And after all my years in politics and national politics and international politics, that's why I left government, saying that somebody got to get out here and start raising Cain on behalf of black folk.
What did you do in government?
Oh, I was Assistant Secretary of the United States Department of Commerce, the first black. I was also a chairman for economic development for governors. Also, I was only black to be appointed to be over the government's property disposal program, which means my signature alone, I can give away all kind of federal property to anybody. Mm-hmm. And also, I was an educator for over the entire state of Florida education system for about 8 years. And so I've been around the bond for a long time, but I finally dawned on me that somebody got to get out here and start a raising Cain on behalf of black folk.
Now, how do we catch up? You know, we're so far behind. How do we catch up to make sure that we can play in the same game or even on the same field?
Well, the first thing I have to do is go back and correct what we've never done. Mm-hmm. In all my years in national politics and international politics, but most of the people you all are very familiar with by in name, they never, never, never addressed the primary problems of black folk. Our primary problem was not social integration or civil rights. The primary problem is you never corrected the legacies and burdens of slavery. Mm. See, the whole point of slavery was to do what? They never asked that. It was to socially engineer black folk into the lowest level of a real-life monopoly game. And what means that they maldistributed almost 100% of all this nation's land, resources, rights, privileges, businesses, and controls of all levels of governments into the hands of the dominant white society. Black folk haven't got a snowball's chance of ever being a competitive people. You might struggle if it lasts another 2 or 3 years, but it's going to wipe you out pretty soon. You came out of slavery in 1860 having one half of 1% of this nation's wealth. Here you are 150 years later. Guess what? You still own one half of 1% of the wealth. And in a nation, in a race-based society, it is what you own and control that determines your equal opportunities and your rights and privileges. It's had nothing darn thing to do with civil rights. That's a waste of time. It doesn't have anything to do with voting, but that's an intellectual masturbation process. Mm-hmm. Ain't gonna do any good. What you need is owner, control, wealth, and power.
They said intellectual masturbation. I heard you say that earlier on something I was watching. You said they get off, but it does nothing for them.
You got it down pat, bro. That's like you starving to death. Somebody give you a steak, you rub it outside your stomach. They ain't gonna do you any good. they do the damn thing for you. I said, no, quit playing with black folk. Mm-hmm. So when I left the president, I ran a campaign, I guess. Well, let me go back. I guess I've been very privileged in all my years. Now, I'm 85 now, so I reached the peak. I don't have to get along with anybody, damn body anymore.
Man, that's a beautiful feeling.
Yes, sir. That's one of the enrichments of age. But I decided after all the years of playing politics, I guess I was privileged in the sense of being the only black in the nation ever was a campaign manager, not in a campaign, but a campaign manager for governors, for presidents, for attorney generals, for state legislators, and congressmen. No other blacks had that. I felt for that reason, I had an obligation to get out here and do something for black folk. And so I don't play any games with black folk. Most of the friends I know that you all probably have on your shows, they're just trying to get some self-indictment elevation. I don't need it.
And what did you think about Kamala Harris and Cory Booker? I know you said voting is an illusion.
They're probably nice people. They ain't gonna do anything for black folk. You say, I have yet to this day ever heard or seen not one president, not one candidate for a public office ever get up and say, here's what I'm gonna do for black folk. That violates the entire premise of politics. Politics is a process that decides who's gonna get what benefits out of life. It's based on a very simple premise of quid pro quo. Politics, as you know it now, never existed until about the 1500s. And it says we will determine who gets what blessings and who suffers. And so, consequently, nobody's ever stood up and said, here's what black folk are going to get. You're talking about the candidates. The first thing these black folks should be asking is not what candidate you're going to represent or going to vote for. Who cares? What you should be asking is, what are you going to get? What are you voting for?
That's right. What are you going to get in exchange for your vote?
That's right. What do you get? What are you voting for? What are you going to get? Mm-hmm. If you ain't getting a damn thing, why are you voting? And see, black, and not one candidate in all the years I ran campaigns, not one candidate or one president or one party, political party, neither the Republican or the Democratic Party, Libertarian Party, Green Party, not one has ever promised that if I get the black vote, here's what I'm going to do for black folk.
It's the first year it's ever happened, and I think the only reason it's happened is because of all the hell that's being raised on social media. And, you know, like a lot of times when these presidential candidates come up here, we ask them specifically, what is your black agenda?
See, you're right. And what did she say to you?
Well, I mean, they all have little things here and there. The only person I've seen have a real live black agenda is Mayor Pete. He has the Douglas plan, which is based off Frederick Douglass.
Okay, right. And see, but most of them, what they're going to do is give you that old game that they used during the formation of this country in 1789. Mm-hmm. And they met up in Philadelphia and says, we're gonna build this nation, and we're gonna create a document that make us the cradle of democracy. It's going to be the Constitution. And they said, and we're going to make this a land of opportunity and freedom for everybody.
Yeah, right.
Okay? So they met in Philadelphia for a whole week. You know what they did for a whole week? They closed the doors and put guards on the windows in Philadelphia and said, now, we got to write this Constitution, but we got a problem now. If we're going to offer this as a land of opportunity for everybody, isn't it inconsistent and hypocritical for us to be getting ready to enslave all these damn black folk we're bringing into the country? They said, how are we going to get past that? They said, well, what we'll do, we'll run a game on them. They've been running that same game ever since. What we'll do in the Constitution, we use very broad and ambiguous terms. Certain of those broad and ambiguous terms would apply to whites, and certain apply to black folk. So in the United States Constitution said, we the people, all the people, all God got a God-given right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Initially, it wasn't even happiness. It was really a property. It was black folk going to be property. And so that's what it was structured on. And they said, well, what about black folk? When they read the Constitution, they said, what we'll do, let's use other words. Let's use cold words like those who are indebted, those who are in bondage, those who are property, those are three-fifths of a human being, mm-hmm. those who are equal to a field animal. And our people never figured that out. Mm. So you got all our civil rights leaders running around for years and running for public office like you're talking about, we got rights. You don't have any rights in the Constitution. There's no rights for blacks in the Constitution. You have the United States Constitution in 1789 was strictly the first affirmative action plan in the country, strictly and solely for whites. Mm. And those who laid on could pass for whites. That's what it's about. Mm-hmm. And black folk are the only people in this country that can't pass for white. And when I left the White House with President Carter in 1970, the Office of Management and Budget says, we're now going to make everybody in here that comes into the country, we're going to start qualifying them as being white. See, up until 1970, as an example, Hispanics were always white. They were always whites. Mm-hmm. But what happened in 1970, I was over education for the state of Florida at that time, and I have the dubious honor of writing the second affirmative action plan in the United States, but the first one for black folk. When I wrote the affirmative action plan, it was approved by the governor and the state cabinets and systems, but not I didn't write it for minorities and poor folk, those broad terms, people of color, and for diversity, you know, and for gays and lesbians and midgets and humpbacks and one-eyed people. I wrote it strictly for black folk.
Mic check, 1, 2.
You're checking out The Breakfast Club.
Bang through the streets.
Let's get back to our conversation with author Dr. Claude Anderson.
So listen, is there any way that blacks can correct the resource imbalance?
Yeah, you can. See, and you start playing the game. That's why my second book, I wrote the first book called Black Labor, White Wealth. That was to show you every technique, every trick, every custom, every policy that the major white society used to lock black folk into a lowest level of a real life monopoly game. And they maldistributed all the resources, period. And power, I follow that with Powernomics. This is a national plan for black folk. It says a national plan to empower black Americans, period. And what you first thing you gotta do, to make it long story short, you gotta have what you never had in this country. That's a group self-interest. You've been inculcated and coordinated and brainwashed and believing that you got some obligation and responsibility to save the world. You gotta save everybody first before you save yourself. Quit trying to save everybody. Whites always got black folk marching, trying to save it. We're marching for gays. We're marching for women. We're marching for poor people. We're marching for the handicapped. And yet you only control 0.5% of wealth. You haven't got a snowball's chance. And in the end of slavery, as I said, you had 0.5%. Guess what? The average white person at that point in time had 3,500 times more wealth than the average black. That means that 99% of everything in this country was in the white society. And it's still in the white society. I don't care from Vermont all the way to California, San Diego. 98% of everything of value is locked in the white society. 87% of it's frozen, locked into white society. You can't get it out. So all you got to compete for is about 13% is up for grabs. Mm. And if black folk don't learn how to compete for that 13%, you are through. And right now, that's what's happening around the world. You see all these, we're going to implode in this country. Same thing happening in Germany with the Jews. And there was a book out called Hitler's Willing Execution to say the same thing. When certain kind of things began to happen to you as a group, you better be very careful. And they started exterminating the Jews. Why? Because you got a group now that you all don't know about called the Council of 300. What they want to do now is say, we got too many people on the earth, and we're going to start losing resources. There aren't going to be enough resources left. We got water. We're going to have water shortages coming. And when water shortages come, what follows that is food shortages. Right now, 20% of the world is suffering from water shortages. So what the council and all these rich people on earth are saying is that we got to start getting rid of some of these people. We're going to start with the non-producers. Now, who are the non-producers in America? The only people in America that produces absolutely nothing except sweat is black folk.
I get what you're saying. I feel you.
No, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, right now, all of our people that are supposed to be successful, guess what? The only thing they produce is sweat. They're running with balls, football, basketball, baseball, tennis ball, golf ball, singing and dancing, producing sweat. Nobody's buying any damn sweat. Now, how are you going to feed yourself? Right. We don't produce anything. We don't have any industries. And we had a chance to get industries in 1700s when the Industrial Revolution went through Europe. Black folk were slaves. When the Industrial Revolution went through America in the 1800s, we were still enslaved. We own and control absolutely nothing.
You don't think that's changing now a little bit?
Oh, man, no. It's getting worse. As a matter of fact, let me give you a difference. Right now, we got all these people that you're running for public office talking about, we gotta look for eradicate poverty. You cannot eradicate poverty. Poverty is a fix. It's a govern. It's a given. You cannot eradicate poverty. Why? Because just like you can't eradicate, you got an up, you got a down, you got an in, you got an out. That is a fix. You cannot change it. And they always got people want to eradicate poverty. What you should be saying is leave poverty alone and go down and try to figure out how to get black folk out of poverty. Don't be trying to eradicate poverty. Leave poverty alone and get blacks out.
What did you think of Barack Obama being president?
Barack Obama is a joke. Barack Obama didn't do a darn thing for black folk. As a matter of fact, he hurt black folk in two ways. First of all, he had 8 years to do something for black folk. But he carefully, indigenously evolved, and judiciously avoided doing anything for black folk. And most of my white friends told me in politics, and I was always with present governors, they say, hell, we would never have voted for Obama. If we known black, but he's going to do something for black folk. We knew he would never do anything for black folk. Mm. And so, but that's the first thing. He never did anything for black folk. But he used that old thing that they did in back in Philadelphia in 1789. He used very broad, ambiguous terms. I'm the president of all the people.
They like to say a rising tide lifts all boats.
That's a stupid thing.
Yeah, because black people's boat got a hole in it.
That's right. It's in the bottom of the damn lake.
Yeah.
See, but black folk, well, if a rising tide would lift all boats, why isn't all these immigrants coming here and building industries and businesses and blacks were slaves? Why didn't they rise? Because they were excluded. Black people are outside and underneath the system. And they don't let you come together. And how do they stop you from coming together? Since they wouldn't let you coalesce during slavery, they come up with this whole concept called social integration. Social integration is a divisive issue. It divides you. It doesn't pull you together. It's a weakening process. You understand what I'm saying, bro? Mm-hmm. It weakens you. If I put a cup of coffee right now in front of you and pour cream in it, do I make it stronger?
Hell no, you make it weaker.
That's right. So black folk went for social integration.
I've always asked, has integration helped to harm the black community? I think it knocked
the black folks' brains out. Black folk had up 100 times more before social integration hit. See, I'm old enough to tell you all that. You all not old enough to know that yet. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, see, we had something. We didn't have the resources we needed as much as we needed, but we had something. We had communities. We had communities all over America. And every city had a major community. Here, Harlem, places like that.
Yeah, we only hear about Black Wall Street. Sometimes you hear about Bronzeville in Chicago. I can't remember the town in North Carolina, but we don't hear about that. They were literally those communities all over the country.
That's right. Well, Sweet Auburn and Atlanta, Georgia, that's had all the big hotels, fine restaurants and everything. In North Carolina, what you're talking about now, see, I grew up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Let me use that as an example. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. We weren't looking for any social integration. You know why? Because we had our own businesses there. My family was a part of one that had the only black bus line in the entire United States. The only black bus line. And I say we had a bus line, I'm not talking about two or three buses. We had over 500 buses.
Wow.
In Winston-Salem, North Carolina. We had our own restaurants. We had our own hotels. We had our own school systems. And the bus line's an example. We don't kill our buses.
What?
Social integration. When all of a sudden, y'all start talking about Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King going down to Alabama, want to integrate the bus lines. Integrate whose bus lines? White bus lines. What they want? They didn't want to own and control and get the resource. They just want to sit on the front of it.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to get on the bus, what you want to do is just want to sit on the front of it. Mm. Now, if the bus is moving, then the back of the bus will be where the front of the bus will be in a fraction of a second. And everybody gets off at the same time. And so in Winston-Salem, we had our own buses. And so when that movement was successful in Alabama, came up to Winston-Salem, and blacks in Winston-Salem says, we want to ride on front of some white buses. So we said, we don't have any white buses. They said, well, get some so we can ride on in front of them.
I feel like a complete ass because I never thought about that. Like that whole time they did the boycott, they should have been trying to establish their own bus company as opposed to wanting to ride. I never thought about that. Y'all boycotted for a year just to want to ride on the front?
See, you're a smart man.
I never thought about that.
But you got it now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You said, no, what difference does it make with them sitting on the front or the back? See, and our safe bus company, SAF, you can go to your computer and find out about the safe bus company in Winston-Salem. See, we own the buses. Mm-hmm. We own the resources. All of our mechanics were blacks. All of our drivers were blacks. Electricians were black. Everything was black. And so they said, well, we just want to ride on the front of their buses. We had two cab companies in Winston-Salem. Mm-hmm. Guess what? As a resource, whites had three cab companies. No, they had two cab companies. They had the Bluebird and the Yellow Cab. We had the Harris and the Camel City cabs. But guess what? When that integration movement started, what they wanted to do, blacks didn't want to ride black cabs anymore. They wanted to ride in white cabs.
Mm-hmm.
In Winston-Salem, we had our own movie theaters. We had the Lincoln and Lafayette. There was a Lincoln and Lafayette Theater in every major city and every black community in America.
Mm-hmm.
But and whites had three movie theaters. They had the Farsight, the Carolina, and the State Theater. We didn't care, but we had our own movie theaters. And so guess what? Blacks didn't want to go to the white black theaters anymore. They wanted to go to the white theaters.
We swear white ice is cold.
Sure it is.
What do you think about the conversation that they're having about reparations now?
Well, I've spent about 60 years that sell books for them. Most of that dialogue is being generated by my books.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, most of the people now that are trying to latch on to the reparation movement don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
If Johnny Come Lately are claim jumpers. They want to jump in on their movement just to get their name in the paper. They don't have a plan about what they're going to do for reparations. But black folk entitled reparations. You're never getting anything, so you started demanding. And the first thing you should be demanding is what they didn't do during the civil rights movement. They should have gone back in 1960s instead of talking about social integration.
That money.
Thank you.
Economic empowerment.
Right. And economics. First, you build these communities.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we do not have not one single black community in America. Mm-hmm. Not one. It's impossible for you to play as a community. Means you got a team. People got mutual understandings, interests, and direction and plans. You don't have a, you have not one black community in America. All you got are black neighborhoods. A neighborhood is where you eat and sleep. A hotel is a neighborhood. A neighborhood is like having a bucket with hole in it. You're pouring water in it. It runs out. It has no effect. And in some of these neighborhoods, it's gotten so bad now, they're not even neighborhoods anymore. The crime has gotten so high, they ran a neighbor out. All you got left is a hood.
That's right.
That's why they call it the hood. Nothing left in there. They don't have any communities. They have a community, you must have three elements to be, make a community, qualify as a community. You must have a wholly independent economic structure that can produce jobs, services, goods, products, and resources for your own people. Two, the second thing you must have in there, you must have a code of conduct saying this is how we're going to behave. Here's how we're going to love and support each other. Here's how I'm going to get along. Here's why when I go to the Breakfast Club, I'm going to love and respect those blacks on there, appreciate them, mm-hmm. care about them, protect them. And lastly, you must have politicians elected to office who will represent you first and foremost. You don't put black folk in public office that will look out for everybody else before they look out for you. If you don't have those three things, you don't have a community. All you got are neighborhoods. And that's what we got in this country, with no neighborhoods. And once you get that neighborhood, then you go to Anderson's five-story building. Now, you got to go back in that community and do what I told you in my books. You must build a five-story building. Once you get a community, that's your platform. That's your baseline, is because you got turf and territory. It's like building a house.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got something to situate it on. You can't build a house with nothing. It has to be structured on something. And once you've got that foundation, that community, now the first thing you work on is economics. You started practicing group economics in a vertical order, practicing group economics, making your money bounce in your own community 8 to 12 times before it leaves. Spend your money with your own people first. Buy from your own people first. So you get an economy going in your community. We're buying your own people's products, services, and goods like you do in Chinatown, any other town, Mexican town. And once you get that economy going, then you get the profits coming, the resources, the money coming in from your economy, then you go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. Our people got that backwards. They want to get into politics before they get in the economy. Backwards as hell. You won't make it.
Mm-hmm.
And don't worry about voting. Voting is immaterial. Voting is a game. It's a form of entertainment. So when you get to the second floor, you take the money that you get from the first floor and you buy the second floor. You buy every politician. You buy every politician with the money you made on the first floor.
So should we vote at all?
I'll tell you that in 1 second.
Okay.
If you haven't got enough money to buy them, then you rent or lease them, okay? So you can get what you want. Make them do what you want to do. And then you make those politicians then go to the third floor. The third floor is your political, it is your court system, your police system.
Mm-hmm.
And make those politicians on the second floor control the politicians who quit shooting black kids on the street and mistreating and catting, beating black folk.
Mm-hmm.
You control the court system so they won't be getting 40 years in jail for marijuana and all that kind of stuff. You got it. So your second floor controls your third floor, your courts, controls your judges and stuff. Just like I'm talking about with Trump and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Then the fourth floor, what you get into is media. You take your money off the first floor and you buy media. You got about 12,000 radio stations in the United States. Black folks, out of 12,000, black folks should own a major portion, at least 15% of them. You got 12,000 cable systems. Blacks don't own it, basically none of them, Holly. You have 5,000 daily newspapers. They don't own a damn daily newspaper. You got 5,000 TV stations. Blacks might own one someplace or two, the best. You don't own, in other words, black folk own 35 thousandths of 1% in media.
Mm-hmm.
You don't own media, you can't communicate, you can't organize, you can't motivate. And so that's the structure. If you want to build your wealth and power, that's how you do it. You spend your, and once you build that economy, Spend your money with your own people. Make it bounce 8 to 10 times. In this country right now, Hispanics, let's take Hispanics. Hispanics bounce their money on an average of 6 to 7 times in Mexican time, Little Havana, Little Cuba. White folk typically bounce their money 8 to 12 times. Arabs and Asians bounce their money about 13 or 14 times. Jews bounce their money about 18 times. Black money doesn't bounce once. Mm. As soon as a black person gets paid, he runs straight to somebody else's business and gives them the money. That means they go bankrupt every night. Every black neighborhood goes bankrupt every night at 7 o'clock, stays bankrupt until next morning. They don't own any damn businesses. When the white man or somebody else closes the doors, they go bankrupt. Well, we're overcoming. We're progressing. Wait, where's the progress? Mm-hmm. Oh, someplace. Well, we got social progress.
What was the fifth floor? I think I might have missed that one.
Oh, I missed it.
You said economics, politics, politicians, media.
Education on the top.
Education. All right.
And again, the fifth floor was education. And here again, based on my collective experiences, I got 6 college degrees and been in all levels of government, from the highest to the lowest, international politics, head of trade missions of third world countries. I said, black folks should understand, education is the last thing. Education is a tool, just like a hammer and a saw. But you got to have an economy to be able to use it. That's why these black kids go get a damn degree. They can't get a job in the black community. They got to go back to a white community, somebody else's community, to somebody else's business, and ask for a job. And once you do that, white people place the value on what your education is worth.
Mm.
That's why I can go past McDonald's and Burger King, got black kids there with master's degrees, mopping floors and working as clerks with degrees, high college degrees, in Burger King's and McDonald's. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because they got master's degrees, but they mastered nothing. Mm-hmm. And so because we don't have an economy. See, when a kid graduates from school, the first thing he do, he should be able to go back to his own community and start building businesses and industries and drawing money into his community and holding it. And see, the Asians learn that way back, and they learn it very quickly. That's why they come in, they figure about after 5th year in college, in school, meaning after they graduate from the degree, they're working a job, 2 or 3 jobs, by 5 years. By the 6th year, they're going to have their own factories and industries, businesses. Right. That's why 1 out of every Asian has a business. 1 out of every 35 whites have a business. One out of every 53 Hispanics have a business. Only 1 out of about 105 blacks have a business.
Right. And well, we appreciate you joining us in this great conversation.
Man, listen, Dr. Clark got all of this work if you need it.
That's
okay,
right.
Black label, white wealth. More dirty little secrets.
Sure. Get the camera on this.
Maybe got it. Dirty little secrets.
We got the camera on.
A black reader.
Mm-hmm. You got it already?
Biodynamics right here. If you want to get more from Dr. Claude Anderson, he got plenty of information to give you.
Well, and see, what I want on those books, I wrote those books for a very specific reason, and I need help from you all. I can't get them into the school system.
Really?
Yeah, because every state has a book selection committee. It's all white. And whites are basically homicidal, not suicidal. They ain't putting into my book.
They're not going to kill themselves.
They ain't going to kill themselves. Yeah, yeah. We're going to test the whole black side of practice group economics.
Yeah.
And so even in the black college campus, you're going to, guess who? Barnes & Noble has all the bookstores on the black college campus is owned by whites. Book selection committee is all whites. I go out to Alabama. There's a doctor answer. We love you, but we only got 1 black book in the whole state of in that state of Alabama.
The Bible.
Yeah, that's 1 book, but only 1 copy of that. And all the damn universities can only get 1 in. And I said, but I want my books in all the charter schools, the public schools. They can't get them in there. And what I like to do, if y'all don't mind, and I apologize if it's something that you wouldn't want to do, I'm going to publicize across this nation that the Breakfast Club, they're going to push like hell to get these books into these schools and
yes,
say,
sir.
We don't want just reading white books.
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, can I do that? And it's okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We gonna keep all of this in. They're going to see it themselves. We're going to put this out.
I got to spend more time talking about you guys.
Dr. Claude Anderson, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you all.
It's the Breakfast Club.
And believe me, I love you all.
We
okay.
Back.
Hey, girlfriends. It's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time for Donkey of the Day.
Donkeys of the Day, ask Charlamagne.
I'm a Democrat, so being Donkey of the Day is a little bit of a mixed up.
So like a donkey. Yeehaw.
Okay.
Donkey of the Day.
The Breakfast Club, bitches.
Now, I've been called a lot in my 23 years, but Donkey of the Day is a new one.
Yes, Donkey of the Day
goes to a 29-year-old man from Los Angeles named Eric Holder. He is the alleged suspect in the murder of the black man known as Nipsey Hussle. By now, I know you have seen the surveillance video of the shooting on TMZ. The LAPD said Eric Holder walked up to the three men and fired a bunch of shots. If you've seen the video, you can see that for yourself. He committed this crime while Nipsey and two other men were standing outside his Marathon Clothing Company store on Slauson Avenue. Let's go to CBS LA for the report, please.
This is the man the suspect wanted in the murder of Nipsey Hussle. Now, this is Eric Holder. He was last seen in a 2016 white four-door Chevy Cruze with California license plate 7RJD742.
Now, the streets are saying Eric Holder is a known informant and hater, and Nipsey simply didn't want him around his store. Nipsey asked him to leave, told him he couldn't be around, and Eric Holder snapped. He snapped because there's nothing more fragile on this planet than the male ego. All right, men cannot take rejection, and Nipsey telling his brother to beat it hurt his pride so much that he decided to come back and kill that man. I'm not going to lie to y'all. The death of Nipsey Hussle hit a little different, okay? I'm not okay about this. I'm tired of hearing stories about humans killing other humans for absolutely nothing, and it really hits different when those humans are black men, because what happened to Nipsey can happen to any of us at any given time, all right? Hearing that happen to Nipsey makes me question my own mortality in a very different way, because if that happens to brothers like Nip, what hope do the rest of us have, all right? Nipsey was a father, he had a woman, he was a brother, he was a son, a grandson, a friend, he was a man who seemed to be doing everything the right way, all right? Nipsey was a made man for real. He released most of his music through his own label, so he had that independence that so many people want. He was an investing in his own community. He bought back the block for real. He had that whole plaza on West Lawson Avenue where his Marathon clothing store was. And he had plans to build a residential building in it with low-income housing, all right? People don't even know that yet, all right? Nipsey opened a co-working space and STEM center in South L.A. called Vector 90, which was simply meant to be a connector of young people to Crenshaw to opportunities in Silicon Valley. Not to mention, Nipsey was killed a day before he was set to meet with the LAPD chief and police commissioner to discuss ways to slow down local violence. The irony of him being killed a day before this meeting. So Eric Holder, a brother from Nipsey's hood, a brother from that community who knew Nipsey and Nipsey knew him. That brother literally hurt the very person that God sent to help people just like him. We cut our nose off despite our faith too often in our communities, and it's exhausting. It's very exhausting. It's sad. I'm disappointed, frustrated, and scared. Because it's not just Nipsey, okay? It happens way too many times to too many of us, all right? And it really makes you question whether or not we need to be frontline in our communities at all. Because it seems like when you make it, especially when you make it in some form of entertainment or athletics or anything that gives you some sort of celebrity or fame, you become a target, all right? Eric Holder is just the latest in a line of hurt people who hurt people, okay? A lot of brothers are simply in pain, and they just keep redistributing that pain to people who look just like them. But Eric Holder, you killing Nipsey not gonna kill your trauma. If you are still alive right now, whatever you were going through before you killed Nipsey has been multiplied times 100. Now you got a whole nother set of problems, and that's why I'm so big on dealing with your mental health and going to therapy and getting to the root of our internal issues, because my brothers, we got to heal. If we don't heal, we just going to have another generation of trauma of passing yourself off as culture, all right? And this is why I was telling y'all yesterday to stop with the conspiracy theory surrounding the good brother Nipsey Hussle. His family and friends didn't appreciate that at all, okay? Nipsey, you know, didn't get killed because he was doing a documentary on Dr. Stevie. Nipsey got killed by a jealous, envious, hating-ass dude from his community who clearly already had some deep-rooted issues and a fragile ego. And he couldn't stand the rejection he received from Nipsey. Like, seriously. I want y'all to really think about this for a second, okay? You think the government is going to get Nipsey killed for a documentary that's not even out yet? But that same government going to let thousands of videos of Dr. Stevie live on YouTube? If they would go so far as to kill Nipsey for that, why wouldn't they just call YouTube and say, take those down? Like, seriously, what's wrong with y'all that y'all would believe that? But I'm not going to go back and forth with y'all about that, because that's just a distraction. And if we're sitting around pointing the finger at everyone else, then we're not dealing with what we need to be dealing with, and that's ourselves. And by the way, I'll play white devil's advocate with some of y'all and say, you know what? I believe you. It is a conspiracy. But what about all the other brothers who got shot and killed in L.A. this weekend? What about the brothers getting shot and killed in Philly, in Chicago, in Jersey, in Atlanta? Are those conspiracies too? We act like we don't see this happen to our people all the time in our communities, and I don't want to feel like I can't be around my own people. But that's where all the real threats to my life are coming from. By the way, I don't have any answers. I'm just doing my part the best way I know how. And the only thing I know to do right now is to encourage people, if they know Eric Holder's whereabouts, you know, turn them in. You know, call 1-800-222-TIPS. Got to get people like this off the street, because this man isn't going to do nothing but hurt someone else. So if he is still alive, which he's probably not, say something. And I know in L.A. y'all going to tear the streets up looking for this guy, or tear the streets up, you know, seeking revenge on his family and friends and people that know him. But just know, no matter how many people get shot, no matter how many people get killed, it's not going to bring Nipsey back. And we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. Please give Eric Holder the biggest hee-haw. I'm not right about any of this. This hit a little bit different. And it really, really, really bothers me and has been weighing on my mind very heavily.
All right.
Because I don't have any answers as to what we are supposed to be doing.
All right, we got more coming up next. We're the Breakfast Club. Morning, everybody. It's DJ MV Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
Yes, sir.
Blueface. Welcome back, sir.
Ooh.
What's happening,
what's
man?
Happening, my brother?
What's up? You had a lot going on in the last couple of weeks, man.
Since the last time we've seen you. It's been crazy.
A whole lot of gang
I feel like I hear more about like the BS and the drama than I do the music nowadays.
Yeah, that's how it works, man.
Yeah.
That's how it works these days.
How you feel about all that?
Well, it's not just you and the drama. Now your family's involved.
Oh, yeah,
everybody's speaking out about things.
Yeah, right.
What happened with mama now? What happened with mama and your sister?
I'm not going to get too far into detail. But
we've seen most of it.
I know. So it's not too much for me to, you know, But pretty much, they just came down, visit regular. My mom got her own spot, her own thing going. She's good. My sister, on the other hand, she's going through her life situation. So she came down. I was going to help her out, you know, get her back going. And then they just, you know, got to a little advantage-y. So I kind of like had to come back a little bit because, you know, the expectations get higher when people tend to think you going, you know.
You got money and stuff.
Exactly.
Like that.
Yeah. So I had to, you know, just fall back.
That's your mama, though.
He said his mama good.
Yeah, my mom good. Good. She got a whole house. She stay in Ohio. She good. It's really my sister. That's what they came down for. The mm-hmm. whole purpose they came down for was my sister.
Did you know they were coming out or did they just
pop
up?
Yeah, yeah. They been here for a whole week. Okay. They was already in the house. They was already cool. Everything was great.
Do they not get along with your girlfriends?
Not, because at the time, this is when I just brought them, introduced them mm-hmm. to the new girl. So they're like, oh, well, like, you know. They not sure how to feel about the new, like, you know, two girlfriends.
I can understand.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah.
It's a weird situation. And they're women, so they probably...
Exactly. And they're women, mm-hmm. so they're a little bit more catty, like, oh, okay. You know how women are with their attitudes and things, so...
And plus, you're her brother, so she probably wants to make sure women aren't taking advantage of you at the same time.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
sure she's protective of you,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sure it was no bad intended at all, mm-hmm. as far as the girls go, like... It had nothing to do really with that. Mm-hmm. That's just what the media made it out to be.
Yeah, why did Instagram spin it in that way? Because they had it saying you was telling your mom she clout chasing and all kind of other stuff.
I don't even know. I don't know. The media, you know, the media do strange things. Mm-hmm. The lie was really just blew it off the top. And that's where it went left for me, too. I'm like, why the hell my mom going on live?
It was a crazy situation because it also revealed that you had two girlfriends, which is something people didn't
yeah,
know
exactly.
prior to that. So how did that situation work out? One is your child's mother.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other girl, did she know her already or you
yeah,
introduced
yeah, yeah.
it?
Yeah, they already knew about each other. So that's why I was like, hey, you might as well, you know. You know, you don't want me to lie to you. You don't want me to lie to you. Let's just.
I respect it,
guys.
Let's
all do it together.
All right?
So honesty can work.
I respect it.
Yeah.
Were you all lying right? before that? Like keeping them separate and lying to them?
Yeah,
and then,
exactly.
Nobody got time for that.
How'd you get caught?
Right? Making enough know? Money to bring it all together?
No, tell me how this happened. So how'd you get caught and how'd you say, okay, I got to just be honest?
I mean, I didn't really get caught because they already knew, like, the whole time. You know, kind of a dirtbag.
Do you cheat? Do you cheat on your girlfriends?
Black men don't cheat.
Do you cheat
Black
on your
men
girlfriends?
Don't cheat. Black men don't cheat.
Anyway, do you cheat on your girlfriends?
He's not cheating. He brought it all together.
I had two
cheating.
Girlfriends. Yeah.
I'm saying, do you date anybody else besides them, or is it just the two of them?
No. I was going hard. It was just us two, as mm-hmm. you can see, right? I mean, I was making it, making it do what it do. Yeah.
That gotta get stressful a little bit, though.
Did it?
What was the most stressful thing about it?
Huh? The beginning probably was the most stressful, like them having to watch, you know.
Watch what?
Or you smash the other one.
Yeah. Or not technically watch, but like switch, you know, look.
Oh, they wasn't any before you, is what you said.
No, they was bisexual, but I'm
okay.
saying, you know, imagine you loving somebody and then somebody else coming and you gotta, you know, like
divide
watch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not watch, but you obviously watching you there, so. That was the hard part at first.
Does the baby mama love the other woman now?
Nah. We didn't get that far.
It's not that. So how do you divvy up the time? Like, as far as which bedroom do you have the same bedroom?
Yeah,
everybody
same
together?
Bedroom. Everybody, we was all in together. It was,
so you know, when you're not there, what do
you do? Full-fledged team. It's even better. They got somebody else to be lonely with.
Boy, you better keep these
somebody
records
else
coming,
to be
boy.
Lonely with.
Yeah.
Because when
yeah.
that money dry up, it's
oh,
going to
no,
be
no.
Hell
it's already,
now.
I already cut it. It ain't even last long, man.
What?
It was over already?
Yeah, it's over.
What, the two girlfriends?
You broke up?
We done, man. Well, I still got my BM though. That's
and
cool.
I saw
that's
you
forever.
Tweeted that you're very fortunate to have her as your baby mother.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What made you tweet that? You're watching things happening on social media.
Man, some bullshit happened, man. It was all over. It was a joke. It could have been a joke. Mm-hmm. Could have not have been a joke. But at the point I'm in right now, I ain't got no time to figure out if it was a joke or
you
not.
You know anything?
So.
You got robbed?
No. It was on live or whatever, and I'm like, yo, they said they y'all here for the so-and-so and so-and-so, and my BN was like, nah. The other girl, she just gave a bad answer.
What was the answer? I missed
it. It was a real, like, you ask a girl, like, are you here for me? And she said anything.
Oh, she said something like, I'm here for the money
exactly.
or something like that.
If she said anything other than, yeah, I'm here for you, then it's like.
Okay. Yeah.
So y'all
yeah,
just
yeah.
broke up.
Yeah, yeah, this is recent. That's when I tweeted that.
Did y'all get matching tattoos?
Yeah.
Where's her tattoo?
On her hand.
You ain't getting no tattoo of her though, right?
No,
So did she have to move out already?
I look like.
Huh? She had to move. So she already moved out.
God damn it!
She made it easy. She thought it was a smart idea to, after the comment, not even, you know, rub my feet, lick my. She decided you mad, so I'm gonna be mad and just.
So if she would have licked your, it'd have been okay.
Possibly, you know, I might.
That's a good way to apologize.
Right?
I feel you. Yeah, show some respect.
So she thought to get mad because I was mad. She pulled one of those. Like, all right, you mad, so I'm gonna get mad because you mad at me. And she left for the day.
And you just changed the locks. That was a wrap.
I told myself, I said, if she come back tonight, you know, I might, you know. She left for the whole night, so she got back, you know. It was.
So she did try to come back though.
Nah, I mean, she didn't leave, but her leaving period after that was like. You must really think that's what's going on if you just leave overnight and, you know.
Well, now your sister and mom, you proved them right.
It was never really about the girls. I think they was honestly more jealous of the affection I was showing to the girls. Mm-hmm. Cause, you know, your mom and your sister, they obviously feel like, you know. But it's like they got to understand it's two different type of relationships.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah, they got.
Have you spoke to your moms?
Yeah.
Y'all squashed the beef and everything, or?
Pretty much. I mean, I'm not tripping on them.
But are they tripping?
I'm not mad at them at all. I don't know.
They act like you've changed since you've gotten some money and some fame.
No, right?
You're supposed to, though.
Do you feel like there's things about you that are different? Because you're right, you do change when you get a little money, a little fame. People do have to move differently. So do you feel like you have changed?
I think when you get money, it changes the people around you.
That's
more,
a fact.
More than to change yourself.
All right, well, keep it locked. We got more with Blueface. When we come back, don't move. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What? I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Blueface with Go Daddy. Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. Blueface is here. Charlamagne?
I saw a fan tell you on Instagram that all your songs sound the same, and you said, yeah, it's less work.
Yeah.
So is,
less work.
It's less work. So you just keep making the same
record? No rap cap.
Huh? You keep making the same record?
They gonna keep
work?
Listening. Why the f*** not?
God damn, Blueface. Is that how you stay
you
around?
You sit here all day in the same chair. They still watching it, right?
No, but I'm saying different things every single
what the
day.
Y'all sitting here, content. Y'all sitting here, standing in the same every day. You talking about what
it's
is
it's different doing? Content because you might be here today, but then Minister Farrakhan might be here tomorrow. So it's always different content.
But you in that same chair though.
You, whack, you still whack, sitting now you there looking bald as a mother.
Take the same song over and over and expect
it's
to have
obviously,
a career.
Listen, obviously not the
listen,
same.
He's not making the same song over and over again. It's like same game making the same songs over and over again. His voice gonna sound like Blueface.
Exactly.
Like not me. That's his style gonna sound like Blueface. His flow is Blueface. You know, I got all the songs, so you know damn well I'm not letting nothing go that just everything sounds the same.
So Wack, why are you there? What happened with you and Mike Tyson, man? Do you really think you could beat Mike Tyson in a fight?
Definitely. I think I can beat everybody, like my artist.
You
like,
ain't supposed to think no other way.
What you mean?
Mike Tyson, though, they get a little slide on some of them.
Know what I mean? Look, Envy, you supposed to think you can whoop me.
I don't know.
I would definitely let Envy win. That's my brother.
I don't know.
Charlamagne, I had to whoop Charlamagne ass because he ain't going to let me lay that down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're going to have to whoop Charlamagne ass.
Now, Blueface, where are we at with these legal issues? Because I know you have to go to court next month.
We going to court for you.
Which one?
The highway shoot.
And it feels like the more attention you're getting, it seems like more people are trying to target you for different things. Do you feel like that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Lawyer put the gloves on and we beat another case. That's a misdemeanor. For the record, for everybody to know, the freeway incident has been reduced to
the story they made up
a
viral.
Misdemeanor. That's the court. I don't know about the blogs. The judge, misdemeanor. It's a misdemeanor.
Okay.
So you good then?
Great.
You gonna get you another girlfriend? Or you gonna thug it out with just one for
I
now?
Might. We taking applications. Taking applications.
Well, Blueface is
I've been trying to get polygamy legalized for a long time.
No, you haven't.
You
better stop. You ain't got enough game for that.
All you need is money. You proof of that?
You trying to say my guy ain't got game is all about money?
Yes.
Hey. I ain't gonna go too far into that. You know?
That's
I ain't gonna
spot.
Go too far.
Into that. Be easy, take your chick. Just be easy.
Yeah, be easy.
So August 9th is the EP.
Yeah.
August 9th.
August 9th.
Okay.
What's the name of it?
Dirtbag.
Dirtbag. Yeah. Right.
Makes sense.
Right. That's what I said. Wack, like, why you wanna call it dirtbag? I said, I'm a f***ing dirtbag.
Blueface bleed him.
We appreciate you for joining us, man.
Nah, I appreciate y'all having me, man.
All right. Blueface, it's the Breakfast Club. Good morning. Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. It's time for your positive note. Give him some positivity.
Marianne Williamson, one of my favorite quotes from her is a great quote. She says, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us.
But you can always pay to get your kids into college.
What up, y'all? It's DJ Envy.
Hey, I'm Angela Yee.
And I go by the name of Charlamagne Tha God, and we just want to say happy holidays from all three of us.
All three of y'all.
The Breakfast Club.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Carrie Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school. Like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.